This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. You forget a name, say, one of the folks in your online network, and you can usually find it eventually, or just Google it, right? But where does the persistent memory of riding a bicycle reside inside us? Or something like playing an instrument, that deep physical collaboration between mind and muscle, or the physical skills required to draw or operate a complicated machine like a plane or a helicopter? Where does this memory live in our brains? Michael Lemonick is a senior staff writer at Climate Central and a contributor to Time magazine, and he wrote a piece about this kind of memory published this week. It's a profile of Lonnie Sue Johnson, someone he actually went to high school with, whose tragic brain injury and memory loss has become an opportunity for some of the most exciting research on the deepest complexities in the brain. Lemonick says his former classmate lost her memory suddenly, you might say, out of the blue.
She was working at her farm in upstate New York, and she was struck with viral encephalitis, an inflammation of the brain. Nobody knows how she got it. And a neighbor discovered her just sitting in her study, staring at the wall, and realized something was wrong and rushed her to the hospital. She almost died. She was in a coma. And by the time she came out of it, it was clear that her brain had been severely, severely damaged. And there's a structure or a pair of structures in the brain, one on each side, called the hippocampi. And these, we learned through studies of earlier victims of severe memory loss, is vital to the construction of new memories, the construction and storage of new memories. Hers was almost entirely wiped out, along with some surrounding structures that seem to play a part in memory formation as well.
And she comes after a character who is famous, of course, in brain research, a fellow whose acronym is HM, who had his hippocampus removed surgically as a way of dealing with epilepsy or seizure activity.
That's right. He had some memories of his past, of his history, especially of his youth. He had this surgery when I think he was about 27 years old, but he was unable to form new memories that were lastingly placed in his brain. So he could, if you had a conversation with him, he could continue the conversation because he could remember what you'd said 5 seconds ago. Mm. But if you went out of the room and came back in a few minutes later, he had no idea he'd ever met you before.
Do you know what you did yesterday?
No, I don't.
How about this morning?
That I don't know myself. I can't tell you because I don't remember.
My confusion about long-term and short-term memory is really, in a sense, something of a metaphor for just how rich the idea of memory is and how Lonnie Sue Johnson is going to add to that information by virtue of her experience, what it is she forgot. And it's a huge amount.
It's a huge amount. So first of all, she is very close to 100% incapable of forming new memories. So she's like HM in that way. If she meets you one day and you come back the next day, she'll have no idea who you are. If she's exposed to something repeatedly over and over and over again, she might begin to form a rudimentary memory of it. But essentially, she is living in a permanent present. She also, unlike HM, she can remember almost nothing about her past. And if ourselves, if who we are is really a combination of our experiences and our memories and all the life we've lived up till the present moment, it's very hard to imagine what that self is like or whether she has a self anymore.
And here's someone who was a skilled cartoonist for The New Yorker who was a pilot, a viola player.
Right. So the difference between Lonnie Sue Johnson, the current patient, and HM is that she was so deeply accomplished before her illness. HM was an assembly line worker, and he was not educated beyond high school. She had gone to college. She was a very successful commercial artist, a musician, a pilot. And all of these skills and previous talents are things that the scientists can now investigate.
One of the most amazing revelations in this piece that you write about and as part of this research, the Johnson research, is that she recognizes her own art.
That's right. She recognizes her own style.
And yet about other art, about other, like a Picasso or something like that?
Yeah, she has a very difficult time identifying very celebrated works of art that she could have done in her sleep before the illness. So there's some difference, and clearly it must be because her art comes out of some deep place within her, whereas all the other art she had to observe and learn about.
And she remembers how to play music, right?
Yeah, she can still read music. She can still play the viola. She can't memorize new music. In fact, there's one test that they've performed on her where she's exposed to an entirely new piece of music and plays it on the viola, sight reads it on the viola, haltingly, and they take it away and put it back a few minutes later. She's never seen it before, as far as she knows. And the question is, will her playing improve as time goes on?
But it's also the question of, in the muscles somewhere is stored something, in the muscles of her drawing, in the muscles of her viola playing.
You know, we talk about the fact that you can never forget how to ride a bicycle. And in fact, that's a profound comment because, as you say, we have memories in our muscles, procedural memories, memories of how to do things physically that we're not consciously aware of. That's a separate memory system. We learned that through HM, who learned new skills without realizing he was learning them.
Does Lonnie Sue Johnson possibly teach us that our memories are there in the brain? It is just the orchestration of organs like the hippocampus that retrieve them and process them, and so there might be hope for traumatic brain injury, that sort of thing?
Well, that's very preliminary because we understand so little still about how that works. But basically, you're right. They may be there somewhere, inaccessible, and you know, rebuilding your brain so you could access them is a bit science fiction-y at this point. But if they're there, that is a different situation than if they weren't.
You interacted with Lonnie Sue. I mean, as we're talking here, it sounds like her life is a little more than, you know, living in a cage and a guinea pig for brain doctors. But that's far from the case.
Oh, that's far from the case. So in her room, she has it decorated with all of her artwork and her books because she was a book illustrator. She's got it organized in a fantastically elaborate way. She spends her days mostly creating word puzzles because she became obsessed with words and the alphabet after her injury. She was never that way before. And she spends her days creating these word puzzles and decorating them. And it's really within her limitations. It's a very rich and seemingly a fulfilling life. She's very cheerful. She's very happy most of the time.
She certainly misses her old life.
She misses her old life. She does seem to remember that she flew a plane and loved to fly a plane. She seems to remember she owned a farm, and she misses it, whatever that means. But she doesn't obsess about it.
How excited are the scientists with the questions that Lonnie Sue Johnson may answer?
They are enormously excited because she's such a richly, potentially informative patient. She's also a delight to work with. There's a lot of laughing that goes on at these sessions because she makes these silly puns and she delights in them so much you can't help laughing with her. She's a genuinely nice and affectionate person. So that's great. But they also really believe that they are going to answer questions they don't even know how to pose yet. As they go along in the research, things occur to them and they say, well, let's try this. Let's test this. Let's try and understand as much as we can about this still very complex brain that is somehow disconnected from its past and its future.
Michael Lemonick is senior staff writer at Climate Central and a contributor to Time magazine. His latest piece, The Muse of Memory, all about Lonnie Sue Johnson and the latest research on memory, is published this week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.